And ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to another edition of Nerdy Notions with Sasha Kaplan.
Hello, I'm Sasha Kaplan, and today we're talking about how I twisted my ankle walking downstairs.
No, we're not.
Oh, that's right. No, we're not. I'm sorry. We're talking about something equally boring. No, I'm just kidding. But we are talking about Captain Marvel. Slightly more exciting than me twisting my ankle walking down the stairs with my cat. It's fine. I'm fine. It just hurts a lot. Anyway, so let's talk Captain Marvel. It is the we open on an intro of Stan Lee cameos because he died that year.
No, he died a few months prior.
Well, that year, yeah.
No, because he passed away in November, and the film was released in March.
So this is the first Marvel movie to be released after his death. So they did the whole, and he actually died during the editing process for the film. So that's why they quickly added in this like tribute to Marvel. And there's like a little thank you, Stan. Okay, we can move on now. So we see some like dust. There's energy. Are we back in Infinity War? No, it's Carol Danvers in Blue Blood. But we actually don't know her name right now. It's just a girl with a gun. And there's another woman with, we see Carol, and then there's this woman standing with a gun. And there's something in the distance, like a creature or something, but it's all a dream. And this girl is, she wakes up, and she's got some glowy hands, and she lives on Hala, which is the Kree capital of the Kree Empire, the Kree homeworld, whatever you want to call it. This is the home of the Kree. For those that don't remember the Kree, they were mentioned in Guardians of the Galaxy. There was a Kree that showed up in an episode of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. They were mentioned in Humans, probably, but nobody watched
Well, the big thing, the most common known Kree was obviously Ronan.
Yeah.
So
little blue psycho. So she wakes up and she can't sleep, so she goes see some dude played by Jude Law. And they do fight training, and she doesn't know who he is, and she kind of, like, and he keeps telling her, like, you need to, you know, focus it on your emotions, and ignore that, and forget about your old life, and she's like, I don't remember my old life, and she's not like she can control what's in her subconscious, so she's got that glowy fist thing, it's kind of cool, it is not the Iron Fist, and she can't control her powers because she can't control her emotions, blah, 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 whatever. So he tells her that, like, oh, if you use the glow, if you can't control it, you'll have to go see the Supreme Intelligence. And so they go because she can't control it. And on the way there, they talk about, like, what they see when they see the Supreme Intelligence, because no one actually sees the Supreme Intelligence. It is too snooty for them. What you actually end up seeing is a person that means something to you, I guess. And Yon Rogg, whatever his name is, I don't care, he's a jerk. Yon Rogg tells her that, like, he's not going to tell her who he sees, that it's deeply personal. But we know it's been 120 days since the Skrull attack, or the last Skrull attack. And she's taken to the Supreme Intelligence. Let's see. So the girl's name is Veers, V-E-R-S. Why that is her name, we will later find out, but right now it's not relevant. The Supreme Intelligence takes on the form of the woman that she saw in her dream. And so the Supreme Intelligence is the leader. It's like the religious leader of the Kree. And she says that she is clear for duty. But she also has this little funny thing on the back of her neck. Let's see. Is he the guy who ends up working? Oh, we also see Karath. He's part of Yon Rag's team. He is later he works for Ronan, and we see him at the beginning of the Guardians of the Galaxy film when Peter goes to get the stone.
Yeah, and he is obviously a big part of the first Guardians of the Galaxy film because he actually is throughout the film until he meets his demise by Drax.
Oh, yeah. So we know there's a mission. They have to rescue some dude named Solar on a planet called Terfa. which is like the border planet of the Kree Empire or whatever. And they're looking for some dude named Talos, who is the Skrull general. We're going to talk about all the comic book related problems I have with this movie. Don't worry. Don't worry. It's all not going to be all cookie cutter summarizations like you're used to. So they seem to be some kind of like elite group. They talk about how the accusers are also coming or whatever. They got to get their, they have to get Solar, who is the spy. They have like cool helmets that help them like breathe underwater. And later we see those help them breathe in space and they kind of come in from the water. There's also some dude named Atlas and Minerva. I believe Minerva has connections to the Eternals. Or something along those lines. So Yanrag is obviously in charge. Their comms get jammed. So Minerva, who's like the, she's like the, what's the word, the sniper. She can't reach them as they move further towards, further inland into the compound where the Skrulls are, I guess, who have captured Solar. Veers doesn't like taking orders, but she's right. So her and Rag go further in. The locals seem restless. Atlas basically like approaches Minerva and tells her something, but he turns out to be a Skrull because she sees the actual Atlas in her scope. And yeah. So Yan orders everyone back. Solars is a Skrull and Veers gets shot.
Well, she doesn't get shot. She gets like stunned. Shot at.
Whatever you want to call
she,
it.
She gets stunned. You know,
something is shot at her. She gets knocked out. So Talos takes Veers. And they also find it weird that like he knew some kind of code that was trapped in like Solars's like subconscious or whatever. So we see that Veers is dreaming of Earth, of an airbase, that she maybe was an Air Force pilot, flashes of her childhood. This is a girl who was like a need for speed and whatnot. And there's like, and it looks like somebody's searching her memories. That person is Talos and he needs something. And so we see the Air Force Academy. She's too emotional. She had an older brother, I guess. There's a friend who has a little girl. There's a cat named Goose and the mentor lady. And Talos is specifically really intrigued by this mentor lady and he needs like her name. So they kind of zoom in on her name and it's Dr. Wendy Lawson. And she's important, I guess.
Really? I couldn't tell if she was important, right? Or not, you know?
It was so shocking. So Veers breaks free. The Skrulls apparently know Lawson and he needs something called the Lightspeed Engine and how that's the key to everything. And we see in the dream of Veers pilot crashing, she ejects, she wakes up. So Veers actually ends up breaking free. She doesn't have any shoes on and her arms are still bound in these like tube things. And Talos, let's see. In a minute. So the Skrulls know Lawson. Let's see. Veers breaks free and she kind of starts walking through the Skrulls. Talos was probing her and he knows that she doesn't remember her past. She runs away. There's fighting through the Skrulls while, and she keeps like, her hands are still trapped, but over the course of the various fight sequences, she keeps breaking the like things her hands are trapped in, essentially. I don't know what to call them.
The barrels. We'll just call them barrels.
Very fancy barrel handcuffs. But eventually she breaks free of those. She also breaks the ship, and the helmet helps her breathe in space, so that she actually manages to use her powers as, like, a booster so she doesn't get sucked out the hole in the ship now. She gets her boots back, and she steals a pod, which Talos damages, but she still leaves, and he follows, and she crash lands in a blockbuster. She crash lands into a blockbuster, and that's pretty funny, actually.
It's so great that they gave us all the lovely 90s nostalgia.
There's some major 90s nostalgia. I love it.
Definitely hands down the best soundtrack in the entire Marvel Cinematic Universe.
I still think that's Guardians of the Galaxy 1, but okay.
Guardians is great.
But that's like 80s nostalgia, right?
No, actually it's not. It's actually like,
well, it's 70s.
Think of it like 60s, 70s, maybe a little bit of 80s, but like just straight up hardcore 90s soundtrack. Great stuff.
I guess. So with that, Veers tries to contact home command. So she finds a security guard. And by the way, this security guard is, I think, is like actually head of security for Marvel or something, which is really funny. And he's just like, what the fudge is this? Who is this chick? And so she's like, is this E-53? Like, I need communication equipment. And it's so funny because she's 100% serious in what she's saying. And he just like points her towards a radio shack. And so she does manage to, you know, put some things together and contact the, you know, her boss.
But if I remember right, she took apart a Game Boy.
I don't remember that part, but she like ties it into the like payphone, which was really funny, but we'll get to that. So, the Skrulls land on Earth.
Real quick, because you said payphone. Just to let all the youngins know what a payphone is. Back in ancient times, we didn't have this thing called cell phones. We had this thing like 1-800-COLLECT and stuff like that.
Hold on. There's a very simple way to say this. It's a police box with a phone in it. Except there's no police, and it's red. Sometimes.
Or it's just exposed in the open.
You know what? It is that time travel device from Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. See, you gotta, if you want to be hip with the youngins, you gotta get the references, man.
I get the references. Trust me. We're waiting for next month for Bill and Ted 3?
So excited. Okay.
But youngins, you put a quarter in the machine, you dial the number, and you call somebody. That's what we did back in the day.
Meanwhile, while Mike is lamenting how old he is, the Skrulls land on Earth and take on human form. So we see that they can like see a person and then copy their exact makeup, which is really cool.
Which is also a great moment because like Talos takes over one like form and one of the other Skrulls take the same form and he's like, pick a different body. You can't have the same one as me.
Meanwhile, two mysterious agents that we've never seen before arrive on the scene. Their names are Agent Coulson and Agent Fury.
And Coulson's a rookie. With two eyes. Yeah, Fury has both of his eyes, and Coulson's a rookie.
Coulson is a rookie. He's adorable. So Fury meets Veers. Oh no! So is this before or after she calls the folks back home? Okay, so she does call the folks back home that Rag is after her, and she's going after the Skrulls, and blah 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 blah. So Fury meets Veers, and there's some really good banter between them throughout the film, but I really liked it here. She tells him about the Skrulls. Fury's like, okay, I believe it. But he also tries to arrest her, which is valid, and the Skrulls attack. She, like, blasts them and runs away in pursuit of one of the Skrulls. As she's, like, getting onto the train or whatever, or the subway, there's this little old lady that leaves. As she's coming in, so she gets on the subway and she's like looking through people.
She finds Stan Lee reading the script of Mallrats, reading the lines that he actually was going to, that he actually did in the movie.
Here's the thing, Feige or whoever, who someone said that Stan's health wasn't great at the time of the recording, so they actually used his dialogue from Mallrats. Yeah. Directly, so it's not even him saying it.
But it's still great though. It's a nice little Easter egg because that's a Kevin Smith reference right there.
Kevin Smith, that's who said it.
Yeah.
Anyway, so she goes into the next subway car and there's the same old lady and she just like has this sweet look on her face, like look at how totally not innocent I am, and of course gets punched in the face. And what's really cool, actually, is that the old lady stunt double and Carol stunt double are sisters. So there's moments where they're actually fighting each other.
Literally.
Literally. So she fights with the lady, then people try to pull her off because why is she beating the crap out of this old lady? They, for some reason, didn't notice that the old lady, like, packs a punch too, but whatever. Then he takes the...
He's swinging around the bars doing drop kicks. It's like...
I mean, I guess even grannies that can do drop kicks don't deserve to be punched in the face. So Veers loses the Skrull. There's also like a really cool fight on top of the train, but it's not really relevant to anything, but it's cool. Meanwhile, Fury's in pursuit with Coulson. Except Coulson turns out to be a Skrull. They crash the car and the Skrull dies. Veers loses the Skrull and exits the subway, but she gets an energy rock, which helps. Oh, she finds like a little thing that that the Skrull dropped, I guess.
Yeah.
Google is unhelpful. Watching her use a computer was really funny. But then like, so she finds the bar that she finds a bar that she saw in her vision, and that's what she goes to.
And apparently there's a deleted scene in this little part because we see her looking at this map, mm-hmm. and a biker shows up.
No, that's not a deleted scene. That's in the movie.
No, but let me finish. So they show the part where she's reading the map and the biker comes up, but then it cuts there. The part that's deleted is she actually kicks the crap out of the guy and steals his jacket, steals his motorcycle.
She still does steal the motorcycle, but to me that would have been excessive. He's not worth that, which is why they deleted it. But she steals clothes from a mannequin, and she steals his motorcycle, and she drives away.
Good choice on the Nine Inch Nails t-shirt.
So the Skrull autopsy with Fury's boss is kind of interesting, especially when they decide to peek under the curtain, which was an improvised scene by Samuel Jackson, which was really funny, actually. Because they talk about how they need to go after Veers and figure out what the Skrull invasion thing is, except Fury's boss is actually Talos, and by literally Talos I mean it's actually the same actor, which just makes it funnier. So I guess the actor's name is Mendelsohn. So
yeah, it's I actually have it up. It's Ben Mendelsohn, and he was in Star Wars Rogue One.
Oh, that's right.
He was Krennic.
Yeah. Yep. And what's funny is when he was like in makeup, they actually called him the Mendel Skrull, which was really funny. So Veers goes to Poncho's bar, and she has more flashbacks. This is the part that I don't understand, though. How did Fury find her at the bar? How did he know that's where she was going? Maybe he was tracking her somehow?
Maybe. Or maybe he got a tip or something like that.
Possibly, because he does in the autopsy room. They do mention about her stealing a motorcycle, so I guess somehow she is being tracked. Anyway, so Veers tells Fury that Skrulls can only sim recent memories, so Fury has to prove he's not a Skrull. Carol blasting Veers. What I'm just calling it freaking Carol. Carol blasting the
jukebox.
The jukebox to prove she's not a Skrull was funny. He's like, "How do I know you're telling the truth?"
But the interesting thing is here. What is the one thing that he said that stands out?
He doesn't like his toast if it's cut in half or something, diagonally?
Yes. Go back to Age of Ultron real quick with his sandwich.
Because I spend that movie paying attention to Fury's sandwich.
It was cut diagonally.
When was he eating a sandwich in Age of Ultron?
The part where they had everyone at Hawkeye's house.
Right, yeah.
It was right after Stark met with Fury in the barn. And Hawkeye's wife made him a sandwich and cut it, he was making a sandwich and he cut it diagonally, and it was like, see, I didn't notice that until somebody brought it up like online or something.
Nerds.
But, so we'll talk about that little point later, though.
So, Skrull's recent memories. So, she's looking for something called Pegasus, which was in her memories. Fury and Veers kind of bond. Fury's credentials get them access to the Pegasus facility. They get put in a secure room, and Fury figures out that, like, they've been detained. It was really funny watching him, like, use the thumbprint with the finger, with the tape and everything, because the head guard touched his badge.
Yeah.
So they get out, they go to the records room. We see the kitty, his name is Goose. And so Nick sees the cat, he's like, oh, it's a cute kitty, and they bond. But then when they're in the records room, the cat is actually following them. Like, she's keeping an eye on them. So also it should be noted that there are 5 actors playing Goose. They are very important and should be respected. They are putting their all into this role. Ironically enough, Brie Larson is allergic to cats. Anyway, so they find the records, and Fury pulls something out. Like, I think this Lawson person is crazy, but the writing is actually Cree. And Lawson is also dead. So they surmise that Lawson was probably Cree. So I guess there was like a mission and the pilot died along with Lawson in 1989. And there's someone named Maria Rambeau that is mentioned. Veer sees the photo of herself and has a flashback. So Lawson is revealed to be a Cree named Mar-Vell. This is insanely stupid.
No, you're jumping ahead.
It happens later, but it's points to point out because this is where I figured it out. But fine, I will save my rant about how stupid this is later. So the tech was supposed to help win the war, but 1989? Anyway. So Veers talks to Rag again, Yon Rag. She's remembering, and that, like, Yon Rag tells her that this is, like, a terrible device or something, that, you know, Lawson was probably a traitor or something. And Fury, meanwhile, used his pager to call for backup, and backup arrives, but he realizes that his boss is a Skrull.
Because when he gets in the elevator, Talos goes, ain't that right, Nicholas?
And he says that nobody calls him Nicholas, even though in Avengers, several people actually call him Nick.
Yeah, but the funny thing is, though, is that, like, the banter between Carol and Nick when they're driving up, it's like Nicholas, you know, whatever his middle name, Fury was.
Joseph.
It was like, yeah, Joseph
Nicholas
Fury.
Joseph Fury. Yeah. Like, what does your mother call you? Fury. What do you call her? Her Fury. What do your children call you? If I had any, they would call me Fury.
Yeah. It was great. So.
So Veers goes back for Fury. Talos and Fury kind of have a fight. And the Skrulls are very strong. They get blasted by Veers. Her and Fury run. The real Coulson, because, you know, he gets on the radio as the boss, and Talos is like, you know, detain Agent Fury. And Coulson lets them go and tells them that, oh, they're not there. So Veers and Nick end up stealing a plane.
Which comes with a great line, too.
Can you fly this plane?
I guess he doesn't. No, with Coulson. It was like, well, I guess he doesn't hate me. And it's like,
yet. So they steal a plane. The question is, can Veers fly the plane? Yes, she can. What happened to the cat? The cat is the smartest character in this entire movie. This is fact. So Goose is already on the plane, and he just, like, crawls into Carol's lap.
Carol then just goes, nope.
Apparently, during the filming, this was a puppet because, again, Brie Larson is allergic to cats. So Veers and Fury get away, and Goose clearly recognizes Veers, and they go to Louisiana to see Maria and confirm who Veers is. So Coulson is the new guy. Okay. So Ronan chastises Yon Rag. Ronan wants in, and it's like, oh, well, the accusers will go in and we'll take care of it. And Yon's like, that's okay. I got this. Veers and Fury meet with Maria. And her daughter, Monica! Monica Rambeau, a.k.a. Photon, a.k.a. Captain freaking Marvel.
You have to introduce her somehow.
I have a problem with this. I have a problem with this because Like, obviously, we will see Monica in WandaVision. That's already confirmed. But it feels kind of unfair. It really does. I feel like I feel like it's unfair to put a strong Black character into this role and just have her look up to this, like, personally kind of unlikable woman who, like, especially because of the way things go out in the comics, it just kind of inadvertently, it puts Monica as a direct, indirectly sort of almost a legacy character, if you think about it. And I think Monica deserves better than that.
Yeah, and the other thing is that, like, this was a good introduction for Monica to get her in front of the audience, because obviously with the events of Endgame, which we'll talk about in the next episode, she obviously grows up those 5 years, just like the way Cassie Lang did.
Well, more than 5 years. This is 1995.
Yeah, so it's like, so she's obviously an adult. So.
I guess the question is, as long as, like, her, I guess the question is whether or not Monica has powers by the time we see her in WandaVision. So we'll see.
Yeah.
I honestly don't like this introduction. Just because, again, it puts Monica as, like, looking up to Carol, which just rubs me the wrong way for some reason.
But she's a kid.
Yeah, no, I understand that in canon. I'm just saying outside of canon, I do not like this. Because Monica is a very strong, independent superhero, and I don't appreciate her being tied into, like, as this, like, Auntie Carol nonsense.
Well, who knows? We'll see what happens when WandaVision happens. We'll also see what happens when Captain Marvel 2 happens.
All right. That's still happening. Oh, joy. Oh, rapture. So, let's see. Basically, they kind of fill in the gaps in Veers' memory. Monica calls her Auntie Carol. She has Carol's stuff. It's very clear that, like, Maria and Monica were Carol's family. She apparently didn't get along with her actual family. For whatever reason, that is not explored. So, let's see. Monica and Carol were test pilots because at the time, women weren't allowed to fly combat missions. And Lawson apparently had lives depending on her. There was a classified mission, and Maria never really knew what happened. We also see Carol's dog tech piece, which finally has her freaking name, Carol Danvers. Well, we see Carol Dan, and then there was the Veers that was found.
Yeah, and we get more in that in a brief moment.
So there's a knock on the door, and it's a neighbor because there's a cool ship parked out back. Carol thinks it's a Skrull and is kind of a jerk, but Talos uses that as an excuse to sneak in the back. There's a second alien who is the science guy. We'll get to that. With Monica, and Talos is like, look, I'm not here, like, no deceptions. But he finally realizes why Carol's different. And he knows stuff about the crash, which was in the black box, which Maria thought had been destroyed. He's also scared of the cat and calls it a flurkin. Says this is not a cat, this is a flurkin.
Yeah, and also it should be noted that when we see Talos, he goes, don't, no, I'm in my normal form, it's all right. And he's drinking from a cup, he's drinking a soda, impersonating Samuel L. Jackson from Pulp Fiction.
Actually Reservoir Dogs.
No, Samuel L. Jackson was not in Reservoir Dogs. He was in Pulp Fiction.
It's not referencing Samuel Jackson in Pulp Fiction. It's referencing Reservoir Dogs. Look it up in the IMDb.
No, it is. The IMDb is wrong. It is actually Pulp Fiction. It is based on the scene in Pulp Fiction where Samuel L. Jackson.
I should have just kept my mouth shut.
Because Samuel L. Jackson is doing the whole big Kahuna Burger bit. It is based off of Pulp Fiction, not Reservoir Dogs. Whoever said it was based off of Reservoir Dogs is a freaking idiot. It's based off of Pulp Fiction because Samuel L. Jackson was in Pulp Fiction. He wasn't in Reservoir Dogs.
Either way, I don't care. So, there's a disc which is put into a computer and it has to load. Which is
great 90s technology.
And they're like, what's happening? And Fury's like, it has to load. Like, it's the obvious thing in the world. So, children, way back in the olden days, computers were not as fast. So when you put a disc in, it actually took time for the computer to register it and process it and play the content. Okay.
And today, we may even still have those issues with computers.
For those computers that actually have disc slots, which a lot don't anymore. Anyway, so there's a recording of Lawson and the experimental plane and the experimental fuel or whatever. And Carol and Lawson were doing this thing. They were the ones, I guess somebody was after them. She tried to avoid them as best they can, but they get blasted. And she can't punch out, and they crash. Carol's okay, but Doc has blue blood, and Lawson's injured and dying. And this is where she tells her that she's not a human. And she tells her that the plane must and the fuel must be destroyed, and Carol has to save them all now. And then basically Lawson gets shot by Yon-Rag. Okay, now I'm going to rant about this. Okay, in the comics, Captain Marvel is a dude. I'm sorry, that was loud, but this is a fact. He was, in fact, a man. He was a guy. A Kree Imperial militia soldier, great hero, fought in the Kree-Skrull Wars. He was not a woman. I really don't like this. There was absolutely zero reason for this. Like, I don't care what, you know, people say. This was stupid. There's no reason for Marvel to be a woman, particularly because now Marvel has a problem of they have a certain Captain Marvel's son to bring into the MCU. Which is why this annoys me, because in the comics, Teddy Altman, the son of the Kree Captain Marvel, and the Skrull Princess Anel have a baby. So there's two ways to do this. Either they gender bent the princess, and it's the prince of the Skrull Empire, or they have to figure out how to make Lawson have a kid who is back on Hala or whatever, who's also named Marvel. Because otherwise, anything else is kind of dumb. Okay. I'm still annoyed by this. There's also one other point that I will be very angry at that we're getting to very soon. Yay. So, where did it go? Carol has to save whoever it is now, and Lawson dies. Yon-Rag wants the energy core. Carol blasts the energy core, but gets caught in it, and the energy kind of fuses with her. And that's why she gets taken by Yon-Rag to Hala. Veers remembers this all now and realizes that she's been lied to. Lawson was on the wrong side of an unjust war. And the Skrulls Veers was told that Skrulls are terrorists and that the ruins that were done or were made by the accuser. So everything Carol knew is a lie. And the Skrulls are just refugees that aren't liked because they resist the Kree rule. And they live on the planet and they would just want a place to call their own. This is bullshit. So I don't understand the decision for this. I really don't. And I tried to rationalize it, but it's annoying because they took a very both parties suck conflict and turn it into a very unnecessary black and white conflict. And I guess you could argue that this is just a certain group of the Skrulls and that maybe this is the Skrull Empire after it has been decimated by Galactus. So maybe it is, you know, just a bunch of Skrulls scattered on different planets or whatever. But even then, even post-Galactus destroying the Skrull home throne world, like, the Skrulls were still annihilating the Kree, and the Kree were still annihilating the Skrulls. This is a two-sided, mass, multi-generational conflict where both parties suck, and both are wrong, and both want to kill each other until they're unified by a certain Kree-Skrull hybrid that I mentioned earlier. So, It just took the fun out of it, because up to this point, I thought what was going to happen was, so she finds out the truth, gets disillusioned by the Kree, joins the Skrulls, then realizes the Skrulls are just as bad as the Kree, and then stops them all from taking the Kree Skrull War to Earth, and then leaves. I think that would have been better, but instead we get this boring ass, we've seen this all 1,000 times before. So, let's see. There's a few Skrulls left. They were being killed. Unless Carol finishes what Lawson started, which is, I guess, get them the fuel or help them find a home. I think that was the point, right, Mike? That Lawson was going to help the Skrulls find a permanent home.
Yeah, away from the Kree.
Right. So they need to find the core. But she says that she destroyed Talos tells Carol that she destroyed the engine, not the core. And there's like coordinates that need to be decoded. And so Carol doesn't know who she is really. And Maria sets her straight. They're BFFs. Maria's there to prep up Carol. Like, I like Maria. I wish we would have seen more of her. I feel like this movie would have just been better if it focused on Monica instead of Carol, period. But that's a separate conversation. So Mar-Vell has a secret lab in space. The Skrulls aren't quite as smart. Yon Rag is coming. Let's see. So the science guy can retrofit the plane they stole. So Maria can't go to space, but Monica convinces her that she should. Monica really is great. I love that the fact that all of the kid characters in the Marvel Cinematic Universe are very intelligent. We have Cassie, we have Monica, we have Harley Keener, Peter Parker. No, just kidding.
Well, he technically is a kid in this universe.
He's a teenager, but yeah, he's still a kid. Carol needs a color change, and we actually see some flashes of like different iterations of Kree costume, including the classic black, green, and white costume that we actually see enlisted fighters wear in the comics. So that was a nice touch. There's a couple others, but they're not as relevant. Let's see. So Yon Rogg, I already just said that. Yon Rogg shows up, checks to make sure that they are who they say they are, but the Carol that he's talking to turns out to be a Skrull, and is not the real Carol. That guy died. I'm guessing that was the science guy. He's dead now.
He did.
He did.
He did.
Rag is cranky, because she knows now. He calls Ronan, tells him to come. Talos warns Nick about the Flerken. Nick doesn't listen. Because he's just, like, playing with the cat. Like, that's what I would be doing. I'd be playing with the kitty.
And as long as he's playing with the kitty and the kitty is happy, it ain't going to kill you. We know of.
So, basically, they retrofit the ship and they take it into space. And they're kind of shocked that it actually works. And
it was great seeing Goose just like kind of just floating without the gravity.
So they find the ship, which is, you know, shockingly cloaked. Didn't see that coming. And the Kree Imperial cruiser, or an old one. So they come on board and there's like a baseball and like a Happy Days lunchbox or something. And
pinball machine.
Right, and the Tesseract. Chronologically speaking, the last time we saw the Tesseract was when Howard Stark fished it out of the water. I take that back. Chronologically.
Yeah.
No, it is.
Chronologically, it would be the last time we saw it was when Howard Stark pulled it out of the ocean.
Do we see it in the S.H.I.E.L.D. facility in the 70s or 80s when Steve and Tony go to see it?
In Endgame. Yeah, we do.
So technically, but that is the last time we see it chronologically.
But up until this point,
yes,
though.
Yes, yes.
We do, and then when you go into Endgame, which we'll talk about next week.
I meant to
say
like in canon chronology. Okay.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Well, up to this point, without acknowledging Endgame or Spider-Man Far From Home, chronologically, that was the last time we saw it.
Right, so we find out that there's a coffee cup with like, there's a coffee cup that is like warm. Talos has some kind of weird throat singing beacon thing, and all of the Skrulls come out, including his wife and daughter. The Kree show up, and they hurt the kitty. Not cool.
It's so great. They're scanning.
That happens later when they're captured. But yes.
Yeah.
So there's... We can talk about it. Everybody pretty much knows what happens at this point. Carol, they split up between who has the lunchbox and who has the Tesseract. The Flurkin eats the Tesseract.
Yeah, but before that, there's this great moment where, like, the Kree are scanning, and they's like, Flurkin, threat level high, and Fury's just like, Fury's like, it's a cat.
And then Fury gets scanned.
And they put this, like, Hannibal Lecter-like muzzle on Goose. Yeah. And he's like, it's a cat. It ain't Hannibal Lecter. And then they scan Fury, and it's like, human, threat level, low to none. And he's like, oh, now I know that's broken.
You know? Right. So Rag is a jerk, and there's the chip on the back of Carol's neck still, and everyone gets captured. Carol's taken to the Supreme Intelligence, who is, in fact, an ass. Then we have the scene with the cat and the scanning. Carol fights with the Supreme Intelligence. She sees her past, and the Supreme Intelligence tells her that she's weak, tells her that she's too emotional, and everyone who has told her no, blah, 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 blah. And then she says something like, oh, you're only human after all. And I guess that annoys Carol. So she keeps rising, undeterred, reborn. And she says, my name, and then the Supreme Intelligence tells her, like, oh, we gave you everything, Veers. And she's like, my name is Carol, and shortens out the chip and, like, explodes. Fury and Monica join the fight. So Carol gets the chip off, and she breaks free of the Supreme Intelligence and basically walks through a lot of the Kree. The Flurkin then eats the Tesseract, and by eats the Tesseract, we mean, like, its mouth literally opens, there's a bunch of tentacles, and it's just, like, eat the Tesseract. I wonder what the Tesseract tastes like. Probably spacey. Anyway, so she, and Nick takes the cat, he's like, I'm trusting you not to eat me. Young Rag is such a whiny little bitch in this movie. The Flurkin is very helpful and just, like, walks through the bad guys with his tentacle teeth, I guess. So Carol fights, and she gets captured by, I think it was by Atlas, and he's like, don't make me do this. She's like, okay, and just blasts him. It was great. Talos is disguised as a Kree. The Flurkin, so there's a moment where I guess Fury and Maria decide to help rescue the Skrulls, but as they're approaching, and, you know, Fury's, like, ready to let the Flurkin fly. The Flurkin jumps down and walks along to Talos and just, like, acts like a kitty and rushes past him. And Nick's like, what are you doing? You're a bad judge of character.
But then there's that great moment, though, as they're walking and Talos is like, play it cool, man.
Mm-hmm. Carol, Kree bash blasting, Carol kicks butt, Maria's a pretty badass flyer, so they get on the plane, and she just, like, manages to outmaneuver Minerva, which was really difficult in that clunky plane, so kudos to you, Maria, for being an amazing flyer, pilot. Maria destroys Minerva with badass flying, that is literally a note I have. Carol is, Talos is fine, but in pursuit, Carol on Rag's ship, she gets blasted, but she's fine, and, like, her helmet helps her breathe in space. Carol breaks Yon Rag's ship. The accusers arrive and deploy ballistic warheads. Oops. And then basically Carol just, like, walks right. She, like, hits one, and then, like, it leads to, like, a, what's it called? A chain reaction. Chain reaction that topples all the others. So Ronan retreats, saying they'll be back for the weapon. He's like, do you mean the Tesseract? Like, no, the woman. So meanwhile, she lands on Earth and to see that, you know, Yon Rag's ship has crashed, but he's fine. He's still a dick. He's like, he talks about her emotions and how she should prove to him that she can take him down by herself. And she's just like, I don't care, and Blossom. So she drags him to a jump ship, or I guess it was his ship.
Yeah.
And she he's like, I can't go back empty-handed. She's like, you'll come back with a message to the Supreme that she's coming for the Supreme Intelligence to end it all. And so Fury is on the plane, and he's, you know, being patronizing to the Flurkin. So the Flurkin scratches him in the eye.
Explains a lot now, doesn't it?
Yeah, but it's so lame. On the one hand, it's kind of lame, like I got scratched by a cat, but on the other side, like I got scratched by an interdimensional cat like thing called a Flurkin that has tentacle teeth.
And actually, Talos's reaction is like, oh, this ain't going to end well for you, mate. You know, it's like.
So Carol will find the Skrulls their own home. Monica wants to go with Fury. Monica wants to go too, but Fury says, sure, but only if you can glow like Carol. And I'm just like, Kara says she'll be back. And she grabs her old jacket that Monica had held on to. Carol says to keep the Tesseract on Earth, and something about Mar-Vell. Fury has a nice voice. There's like a little funny moment when they're talking about like singing, and the Marvels, the group.
Yeah.
And so after Fury had sent the message for backup, Carol ends up, and it doesn't work out, Carol takes the pager. She now gives him back a modified version of that pager for emergencies. So the ship, which is Mar-Vell's lab, and basically she takes the Skrulls on the ship and they all leave. In New York City, Fury is writing a project called the Protector Initiative, something to defend the Earth from global threats. And Coulson comes in and there's a set of eyes that have arrived, replacement eyes. I guess, and Fury's like, is it true that like you got the story is that the Kree burned his eye because he refused to give them the Tesseract, and Fury's like, I will neither confirm nor deny.
As he looks at Goose.
And Goose just kind of looks at him like, what did I do? It's a very cute kitty. So the question is, what's next? S.H.I.E.L.D. alone can't protect us. Coulson should have pitched the idea of looking for Steve again, but details. But he looks at the pictures of this is also annoying. So he looks at the picture of Carol, and it says like her call sign was Avenger for some reason. So
yeah, it was Carol Avenger Danvers.
Which is really dumb. And so he decides to call it the Avengers Initiative. And I feel like there could have been a different way to work that word into the movie that was not having that be her call sign, but details. So, and as he types in the Avengers Initiative, we actually hear the music from the Avengers, which was kind of cool. So
it worked out anyways.
So then we get to the after credit scene, which I guess I'll talk about it more next week when we did Endgame, but this scene doesn't quite make sense exactly.
The pager one?
Yeah.
So this is the thing that we talked about last week on the Ant-Man and Wasp episode. I've said it before several other times. This movie should have came first, followed by Ant-Man and the Wasp, because of these end credit scenes. Because
I don't think it would have mattered, because into Endgame, the scene doesn't quite fit anymore.
Well, no, and that's the reason why, because here's the thing. The very last scene that we see in Endgame, or in Infinity War, I mean, is the pager from Fury, which should have automatically have taken you into Captain Marvel, because now it just explained the pager to you. And then you have the end credit scene where you have the Avengers around, you know, waiting around, and then the pager thing happens, and then Carol shows up. That right there would have worked so much better as the first film to come after Infinity War. And then you have the thing with Ant-Man and the Wasp, where you have Hope, Hank, and Janet get dusted or snapped out, and then we'll talk about what it's eventually called in Spider-Man Far From Home.
I refuse to call it that.
But the thing is, though, is that would have worked better, because you had the thing with the ant playing the drums. So let's just disregard that. Let's just focus on the dusting of Hank, Janet, and Hope. because
but
that then leads
not the point, though.
But then that leads into Hawkeye's family getting dusted.
Right. No, I agree with you that Hawkeye's family should have been the secondary after credit scene instead of starting that off with Endgame. But the problem I have with this.
Well, no, I'm actually, I have no issues with that, with Hawkeye's family getting dusted to start Endgame. I just think that they should have flipped Ant-Man the Wasp and Captain Marvel because of how the end scenes work.
I really don't mind it. I really don't. But my issue is not that. My issue is the after credit scene here is the Avengers. You know, they found the pager. Like, Natasha and Steve are there. And it beeps and then it turns off. And then there's, like, lots of people missing. Rhodey tells them that the pager is, like, that it's like the like it's not working anymore. Banner says the signal crapped out. They're like, no, you need to reset the signal. We got to send it out again. And then Carol shows up
and says, where's Fury?
Right. But that doesn't happen. Where did this happen? Because in Endgame, Carol doesn't show up. Does Carol show up separately from the pager or not?
She shows up separately. So how it is that this was actually her introduction to the actual Avengers.
Right.
Because the very first thing, we're going to get to this next week when we talk about Endgame, is that the very first thing that we see is we're out in space.
Right, and Tony's dying.
With Tony and Nebula.
Nebula.
And it's Carol who comes to save them because...
Right, which just...
So, but the thing is, though, is that to do it this way makes sense because how would Carol know that Tony was out there? They had to have told him. And that's the thing. So, like, you have Rocket there, and he could have got, well, he could be with Nebula.
Okay, see, okay, so then they tell, okay, that makes more sense now. See, so even Carol shows up.
Yeah, exactly. So even though we don't see that stuff on screen, per se, her showing up to the Avengers and her end credit scene makes it make sense for her when she finds Tony in the beginning and Endgame because she met with them first, they told him about Tony, and then so forth.
I wish the scene had been a little bit longer just to tie that in a little bit more because otherwise, like, without what you just said, it just looks out of place because that's not how it happens in Endgame.
But then again, that's where you place the movies actually matter.
I don't think it would have mattered in terms of, like, because, you know, Captain Marvel leads us straight into Endgame. I think that's fine. But I don't know. I would have liked a little bit more of that scene. Like, instead of focusing so much on the pager itself, it could have been like, oh, hey, the pager's gone. Why is that? And then Carol shows up. They're like, oh, where's Fury? Oh, where's Tony? Whatever. Anyway, but
they could at least said, you know, keep the entire scene the same, and then they can go, you know, she goes, where's Fury? And then they can go, who are you? And then they could cut it right there because now you know they're about to have a conversation.
Fair. And so before we get into my thoughts on this movie, the second after credit scene is Goose puking up the Tesseract in a very hairball-like manner.
That's how Nick Fury got the Tesseract.
So I don't know. So I have mixed feelings on how the story of Nick actually losing his eye, because on the one hand, it's kind of hilarious, but at the same time, it's kind of dumb. So I don't know. I have mixed feelings on it. I can enjoy it and be critical of it at the same time. I'll talk about what I like about this movie, and then we'll talk about what I don't like about this movie. I like the banter. I found stuff to enjoy in every one of these movies, even the ones I didn't like, except Thor Dark World. So I will say I liked the banter between Carol and Fury. It was well done. They had good chemistry in terms of, like, working together, and I really appreciated that. I like Maria, I like Monica, I like all of the characters themselves. Maria definitely, I wish, had a bigger role in this movie. I also do think they could have done a whole thing if they just, like, forgot about Carol for a while and put Monica instead, because Monica is a significantly more interesting character, but that's just me. I say this as also someone who, like, just doesn't really like Carol half the time in the comics. And usually it depends on who's writing her and I don't have preference of writers per se, but half the time she is this like, thou art most holiest, I know better than all of you because I'm Captain Marvel attitude, to, okay, sometimes she can admit she's wrong. And I mean, yeah, that kind of makes her a dynamic character or whatever, but I still don't really like her. It's just, it's kind of an okay movie. Like, it's not nearly as amazing as everybody said it was, and it's not the trash heap everybody else said it was. It's just, eh, it's okay. I don't remember what the last movie I said that was okay. But, like, the humor was fine. My two biggest gripes are the Skrulls are the innocent victims and Mar-Vell. I know it's a different universe, but I don't understand how this conversation in the writer's room went. Like, unless somehow later on it is revealed that the Skrulls have reformed, or, like, I wish we would have gotten a little bit more context as to why the Skrulls are in this position, because, oh, they resisted Kree rule just doesn't work for me. Especially because, as we find out in the comics, the entire reason the Kree are able to be as powerful as they are is actually because of the Skrulls. So, for those that don't know, this was actually revealed recently in Marvel, as we lead into Empire, that the Skrulls were more technologically advanced, and they like to share their technology with other species, I guess. And so they put this contest between two people from the same planet, the Kotati and the Kree. They took them to the moon, gave them all the technology they wanted, and said, build us something, and then whoever wins, like, gets all the tech and everything. The Kree built, like, you know, a massive, like, city. The Kotati built a garden. And the Kree then get pissed because they clearly lost and annihilate the Kotati people. And then they decide to start the war with the Skrull. Then they start fight the Skrulls. And so this leads into a 1,000-year war pretty much. And throughout all of this conflict, there's multiple attempts to end it by the Fantastic Four, by the Avengers, by Captain Mar-Vell and the Skrull Princess Anel, before the Skrull homeworld is decimated by Galactus. Now, obviously, at the time Marvel was doing this, they didn't have the rights to Galactus. But you don't have to say the Galactus consumed the Skrull homeworld. You could just say that...
a great power destroyed it.
There you go. Or, you know, the whatever it was. Like, you could have even blamed it on Thanos. Like, there's 5,000 different possibilities. But I don't like the fact that they took two bad guys, two people completely in the wrong, and which was like a very fascinating conflict, and turn it into a black and white bad guy, good guy conflict. Because that's boring. And I say this as like somebody who just reviewed Empire number one, which is, by the way, really, really good. If you are interested in more about this, please, please read Empire. There's only a handful of issues out, and so far they're really good. Or you can just read my review and bask. But this movie is just okay. It's an origin story, whether or not people want to argue that or not. It is an origin story. Sure, Carol already has her powers, but she's not a hero. So this is about a character like...
But at the same time, it also acts as a prequel film for Fury, Coulson, Korath, yeah, and Ronan.
Yes.
So.
But my other gripe with this movie is that Carol's actually not an emotional person. So, like, throughout the movie, she's actually not very emotional. She could be impulsive, but she's not emotional. And the fact that throughout this movie, they're constantly telling us, like, keep your emotions in check and don't let your emotions rule you and all this stuff. And I'm like, where are they doing this? I think they failed at the feminism part a little bit. Because, yes, this is a female empowerment film, and she does, you know, basically a lot, like, you know, she does fight a lot of, I guess you could argue it was sexism, but I don't think it was. Because he doesn't, he's not telling her that because, if anything, he's a, if anything, Yon-Mrak hates her more because she's human and has this power that he's jealous of, rather than the fact that she's a woman. And he's scared of her powers. And you could argue that, you know, this is just an example of, like, a man being scared of a female power, blah, 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 but just, like, I don't know, the... I do also think that they overpowered her just a little bit. Not completely. Because, you know, it's like an energy force. So, of course, she's going to be stronger than everybody else, but just like a little bit. It would have been nice to see her struggle a little bit more with the ballistic missiles that Ronan launches. Because we don't really see her struggle necessarily. We see her going on a journey. We see her kind of mentally struggling, but it's just, it would have been cool to kind of see a little bit more depth. And maybe that's something that will be explored in Captain Marvel 2, but like, Carol's just like a little bit flat as a character. Just a little bit. And there's nothing wrong with that, because this is an origin story and she's supposed to be cold and distant because this is a new planet, even though she's from C-53 or Terran. Terran? They call humans Terrans.
Yeah.
So, like, anyway. So, I don't know. This movie's just okay. It's not wow. It's not exciting. I still think Wonder Woman did it better.
Yeah, and it's actually interesting because Wonder Woman had this problem, too. Where it's female lead, female director... You know, so that those two things right off the bat took a lot of backlash.
Which is really dumb.
Yeah, because like Wonder Woman faced a lot of backlash because of the fact that it's Patty Jenkins directing, Gal Gadot.
Do not get me started on all the hate they flung at Gal Gadot. Yeah. Do not. We would literally be here all
but
night.
But then it's the same deal with, you know, Captain Marvel, Brie Larson playing Carol Danvers, and then you had Anna, I forget what her last name is, as she was actually co-director
with her brother, yeah.
But the thing is, though, is that she technically did become the first female director in Marvel. And so there was a lot of, flack for that. And it's stupid because it's like, it's just, let's just be straight up honest about it. It's your straight white boys who can't handle their own masculinity.
So
that's really what it is.
Which is ironic as all hell, since a guy wrote the Wonder Woman script. But here's what I will say. The reason that I think Wonder Woman succeeded in ways that I think Captain Marvel didn't is the script. And the reason I say that is because the script... The script for Wonder Woman was written by someone who is a comic book writer, but also understands movies and television. And that someone is Alan Heinberg. And he's great. Please read his stuff. I think the script was a little bit... I think the script could have been polished a little bit more for Captain Marvel. I don't know anything about the script writers. I know initially you and I were like really into like who wrote the script and all the behind the scenes.
Well, and one of the things movie, that I do know about this is that there was, so when they filmed Brie Larson's stuff for Infinity War and Endgame, like the end credits scene, because that was filmed before the movie was even filmed.
Right.
And her stuff in Endgame was actually filmed before Captain Marvel was. So they didn't even have an actual direction for how the character was going to be at that time, which also explains a lot of that coldness that you brought up. Because, for Endgame, she had to be portrayed a certain way. And they kind of got shoehorned a little bit by filming that stuff first before even having the stuff before even going into production for Captain Marvel, it kind of goes, okay, this is how they're going to portray her in Endgame. We got to kind of introduce her in a way that kind of matches that. So when it gets to her Endgame appearance, it falls in line a bit because it's got to match the universe. Because like, you know, when you look at Thor Ragnarok and you look at how colorful it was in Thor Ragnarok for that ship at the very end of the film, and then you look at that exact same ship at the very beginning of Infinity War, it's a much darker, grimmer ship.
True.
And it's because they had to darken the mood from Taika Waititi's vision
to how
the Russo's vision is.
See, the thing is that the writing for the script for this movie started as early as like 2013, 2014. And so, like, I understand Brie not necessarily knowing where to take the character, but Marvel does things so tightly and so well thought out that this feels like a misstep that they didn't quite think this part of it through when they had the time to do it.
I definitely think that, you know, and I agree with that, and I think the biggest part of it was is that you, and Spider-Man Far From Home kind of had this problem a little bit, because the other part of the equation is, and we'll talk more about this for Far From Home, because they actually did it better in that regards, is that, you know, you have these scripts and, you know, like you said, yeah, they've been working on a script since this time, but then how does it work within the actual universe of what is going on and what is going to happen? Because obviously with Spider-Man Far From Home, they weren't even told what was going to happen in Endgame. They had to guess they were told, like, oh, you're going to have to deal with it. Like, I think the beginning part of the film was actually filmed so much later because they had to wait for after Endgame to be finished filming and stuff like that. And keep in mind, Far From Home came out 2 months after Endgame did in theaters.
Yeah.
Like, the Russos actually did a 2-week thing where they said, hey, don't spoil it. But then effective this specific date, you can start talking freely about it because, oh, by the way, we're releasing the Spider-Man Far From Home trailer.
That's true.
Because we have to promote the movie. So it's not just Captain Marvel that was affected by this type of stuff. It was also Spider-Man Far From Home. And it's weird. True. So.
It's true, but I get, and I think this goes to, like, a lot of the criticisms of Marvel's that, like, sometimes things are a little too secret. And that, like, I don't think anybody would have cared if they got spoiled that, like, oh, shocker, everybody comes back at the end. Like, we knew that. This is Marvel, this is not DC. Like, we knew they were all going to come back. Especially because we knew there were projects and contracts for all of these other actors and characters. So, like, there was no point in keeping that part a secret. But, so it says, so bear in mind, this is the Wikipedia. So it says, development for Captain Marvel began in 2013. It was officially announced in October 2014 as a Marvel Studios first-led superhero film. And Nicole Perlman and Meg LaFauve were hired as a writing team the following April. So this is April of 2015. After submitting separate takes on the character, the story borrowed elements from Roy Thomas's Kree Skrull War, which obviously Larson was also, etc. So it looks like they were two different visions that kind of were combined through with other writers. I think it should be noted that the script had a total of 5 writers, of which 4 were women. Anna Boden, Ryan Fleck, and Geneva Robertson Dworet. So kudos to having, you know, female writers on this. But I gotta say that, like, just because a writer is female does not necessarily mean they can write a female character, but that doesn't say that they can't or shouldn't. And you're right that some of the missteps could have been with the fact that Marvel was so focused on Infinity War or Endgame that they forgot these other things.
Yeah. Because, like, Ant-Man the Wasp, it was easy for them to do because the way that the story is told is that that is happening real time to what is going on in the Infinity War film. So it's a film within a film
with Ant-Man the Wasp. And there's no need to significantly tie it into what is happening in Infinity War until the end, which is what they did.
Yeah.
But you're right, and we'll talk about this more when we do Homecoming, that...
Far From Home.
Oh, Far From Home. Can they please stop putting the word home in the Spider-Man titles? But
I just want you to know that the third Spider-Man film will be called Spider-Man Home of the Multiverses.
I thought it was Spider-Man Home Alone.
No, it'll be Home of the Multiverses. But we'll explain why when we get to that in 2 weeks.
Isn't that official?
Not yet, actually.
Okay,
apparently there's still negotiations, because I saw the same thing you probably saw like 2 days ago.
I actually didn't see anything, surprisingly.
Oh, I saw something 2 days ago that was frequently new. Yeah, so
we'll see what happens.
We'll talk about it off air.
Anyway, so with that, Mike, tell us where the people can find you on the social medias.
Well, first, before I even do that.
Oh, that's right. We need to find out the how this movie ranks up.
Captain Marvel clocked in at 2 hours and 3 minutes. With an IMDb score of a 6.9 out of 10.
Yeah, that's fair.
Let's also be honest that if they're also basing it like the way certain other reviews are, there's probably going to be a lot of one-star reviews because of the, you know, like what we talked about, the white masculinity issues. They can't have a female lead and all that other garbage.
So if you take that out, I would say that
it would probably be around a 7.5, honestly, if you took out a lot of the troll stuff.
I'd give it a 7.3. Well, I would definitely not go above a 7.5. Let's leave it at that.
And that's why I put it there. Because if you take out all the troll, you know, and, you know, crybaby ones, like, oh, we can't handle a female lead. You take those ones out, you probably have a slightly higher score than 6.9.
Give it a general B minus.
Yeah. So that was that. So back to where you can find me. You can find me on the Twitters at TheLindenBaum75, Facebook at Facebook.com/X95Productions, and of course everything on the website at TXHDHockey.com, and for this show, /Nerdy-Notions.
And you can find me always as GeekGirl101 on Tumblr.com, GeekyCaptain on Instagram, and you can read my reviews of Empire Number 0 and Empire Number 1 on GeekyCaptainWrites @.wordpress.com.
Ooh, a website now.
I'm so fabulous. So with that, please join us next week when we talk about a movie technically Mike and I already talked about, but we will be revisiting again, the one and only, the dreaded too big to fail film, Endgame.